The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. My name is Max Ertstein. For those of you who come regularly to this morning sitting and talk, you probably know that Andrea is away for the next 6 weeks. She does teaching in Massachusetts. There's a 3-month meditation retreat, which is a wonderful retreat. And she'll be teaching for the first 6 weeks of that with a team of about 4 or 5 other Vipassana teachers. And that's at IMS. And I'm delighted to be coming here for the next, you know, for this time that she's away. And I don't think I've ever taught this morning before. Maybe I have once. But just to tell you a little bit about myself, I'm a student of Gill. Started practicing here at IMC when I was 21 years old, which was about 16 years ago. Doesn't feel like 16 years ago. And at the moment, I'm in the middle of a 4-year Dharma teacher training program, which is run through Spirit Rock and IMS. And so teaching retreats and giving talks, and so yeah, very happy to be here. And one of the opportunities of having 6 talks or 6 sessions is that there's a chance to go into a topic a little bit more in detail, you know. And one of the secrets of teachers is they often choose a topic that they want to learn more about, because you have to learn it in order to teach it. And what I thought for these mornings is to look at the Satipatthana Sutta. You could say in a way that this text is a root text, or the root text for our tradition of meditation. It's one of the few places where the Buddha laid out a very comprehensive set of meditation instructions. So if, like, you know, you go to one center or setting and the teacher teaches one technique, and you go to another place and the teacher teaches another technique and different techniques, you say, oh, I wonder, what did the Buddha teach? You know, the Satipatthana Sutta is said to be the place where the Buddha gave his meditation instructions. So this text is the source of all the instructions that we give. There's something like, I think, 23 different practices in the text. So there's a lot in it. There's a lot going on. And it's not like you're in one 20-minute meditation, you're going to be doing all of those practices. And because there's so much in the text, many different lineages of Vipassana meditation find as their source this text. You know, so I don't know, you know, if these names will sound familiar, but Mahasi Sayadaw was one of the great monks and meditation teachers from Burma in the last century. And the style of practice we do at IMC comes directly from Mahasi Sayadaw's teaching and his understanding of the Satipatthana Sutta. You may have heard of Goenka. Goenka gives these 10-day courses. They're all over the world. They do a kind of body scan practice. That also comes from this text. And a number of other teachers who have influenced meditation in the West. So some people say all of the Buddha's teachings are contained in this text. If you get very interested in it, this is sort of, you know, I think many people feel this is one of the best interpretations of the text. It's called Satipatthana, and it's by a monk called Analio. And Analio is a wonderful scholar and practitioner, and kind of goes through the text line by line by line. And Joseph Goldstein, who's a teacher in Massachusetts, also has a relatively new book out, which is called Mindfulness. Oh, it's called Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Awakening. So that's also very good. I just want to start with what I read during the meditation, because this is how the text starts. And this, well, I'll just read it again and then. Monks, the word that's used is bhikkhus, and it's widely understood now that monks is a good translation. It basically means any serious practitioner, any serious meditator. So this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of suffering and discontent, for acquiring the true method, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four Satipatthanas. So right at the beginning of this text, it's like the Buddha saying, this is the direct path. You know, this is the direct path to overcoming stress, overcoming suffering, and awakening. So it's a powerful statement, and one of the things that I think it may be an interesting point to take away from this is that the practice of mindfulness has a direction to it. It has an agenda to it. You know, often in our scene, you know, in the instructions we give, and I do this as well, we talk a lot about the simplicity of being with what is. You know, of just meeting the moment, just meeting our experience, receiving sensations, you know, this being with, bare attention, without all the thinking and the stories and the evaluations, and you know, it's just this contact. And this is a beautiful practice. And this is I think I've heard one teacher say that we need to fall in love with bare attention. You know, we need to fall in love with this disengaging from all the thoughts and all the stories, and just experiencing what we're experiencing and being willing to experience what we're experiencing. Really being willing to experience what we're experiencing. So this is an important part of mindfulness practice. It's, you could say it's the base, it's the foundation. And what the Satipatthana Sutta, what the Satipatthana practice is saying right away is that there is a cultivation associated with mindfulness. It's not just mindfulness for its own sake. It's not just be mindful and then, you know, and then that's enough and just notice it. And, you know, that actually there's a path. There's a path, there's an unfolding. You know, so the practice of mindfulness, the practice of sati, of satipatthana, leads somewhere. You know, it has an agenda. It leads to less suffering, it leads to what's helpful, to what's wholesome, and then eventually it leads to this release, this breakthrough, you know, where the consciousness itself is released. You know, so this is what the Buddha is saying right away, that this practice is the direct path, you know, to this release. So the Pali word for that's translated as direct path is, I hope I'm getting it right, I think it's ekayana mago. Sometimes this has been translated as the one path. This is the one path because ekka is one. But, you know, it turns out, and you know, as scholars really have more of an understanding of the Pali, which is the language of the Buddha, and how it's used in other places, that maybe a more accurate reading is it's the direct path. So there may be other paths, you know, to this goal. But the Buddha is kind of asserting that these four satipatthanas are the direct path. So part of satipatthana meditation is this learning how to cultivate the path. Gill has sometimes described mindfulness, describes sati as not so much something we do, but as a state that we enter into. You know, it's a state that gets established, a state of mindfulness. And so he's described it as, you know, one way it can be described as a kind of floating. You know, so we set up these various conditions, and then we can just float in mindfulness, float in awareness. And so that's one side of mindfulness. And then maybe you could say another side of mindfulness is the kind of active, the paddling, it's kind of doing the work in a way. And these two sides make up satipatthana practice. The word satipatthana itself has often been translated as foundation of mindfulness. Sati is mindfulness. And patthana can be translated as foundation. So often if you hear the foundations of mindfulness or the four foundations of mindfulness, that comes from this. That's a translation of satipatthana. There's been a rethinking of the word foundation, or the how to translate satipatthana, and it seems like there's a better case for using a different Pali word, that patthana coming from upatthana, meaning to place near. And there's a whole, it really gets into the kind of the scholarly look at the language. But now the translation that people like and seems to have a slightly more accurate gist is that rather than calling the foundations of mindfulness as more of the ways of establishing mindfulness or the application of mindfulness, and the only reason I'm mentioning it is because when we, the four foundations of mindfulness being the body, feeling tones, mental states, and a word called dhammas, which is kind of sometimes translated as phenomena. When we call it that these are the foundations of mindfulness, it's sort of like it gives these four things a certain kind of power. It's like, you know, that the power is in the object, it's in the body, or it's in the feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And when we say that they're the ways of establishing mindfulness, it's pointing to that it's more about how we pay attention, how we give attention, rather than the object itself. And with these four satipatthana, the Buddha is saying that these, you know, if our goal is to be free from suffering, if our goal is to cultivate this path towards what's helpful, what's wholesome, culminating in this release of the mind, release of suffering, then these are four areas that are very useful to pay attention to. You know, when I was living in the monastery, in a Zen monastery, and one of the things I really liked to do, it was back in the days when we had a lot of rain in the winter, and the stream there was really strong, you know, and there's this great sound of the water. And I loved to just sit on the bridge. This is at Tassajara. Some of you may know Tassajara. I've been there. And to sit on the bridge and just listen to the water rushing through this little valley that we have. And it was so, so nice, you know, so pleasant. And, you know, the sound of water is, you know, creates a certain mood. So there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's a nice thing to do. And, you know, the Buddha is saying that to turn the attention around and to look at these four areas, the body, the pleasant or unpleasant nature of experience, the mental state that's happening, and these various dhammas, it's a suggestion that maybe, you know, if your goal is to be free from suffering, maybe these areas are more fruitful explanations than simply, you know, looking at a flower or listening to the ocean or, you know, or something like that. So what are these four satipatthana? What are these four ways of establishing mindfulness? Here, in regards to the body, a practitioner abides contemplating the body, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. In regard to the feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, she abides contemplating feelings, diligent, clearly knowing, mindful, free from desire, discontent, in regard to the world. And so on with the next two satipatthana. In regard to the mental states, to the mind, he abides contemplating the mind, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regards to the world. And the same thing for the dhammas. Diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desire and discontent in regard to the world. So here is where the Buddha first mentions these four satipatthana, these four areas for establishing mindfulness. The body, the feeling tones, the mind states, mental states, and the dhammas, phenomena. There's a way to see these four that they actually, it's possible that they flow into each other, or that they, we can certainly say that in these instructions there's a progression from, in a way, what's easiest to notice, the body, you know, and it gets more and more subtle. So the body becomes our foundation or the base. And then through connecting to the sensations of the body, learning ways of seeing the body that enable a kind of letting go and a tranquility, a calmness, it becomes easier to notice the feelings, feeling tones, the pleasant or unpleasant, neither pleasant or unpleasant. And this can become a doorway to whatever mental state is present. Is there joy? Is there anger? Is there desire? And so on. And then the fourth satipatthana goes into these mental factors of dhamma, which can sound very abstract, but they're so important in part of the Buddha's teaching. You know, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, the seven factors of awakening, and then the Four Noble Truths. So this is, you know, it's getting very subtle from sitting and being mindful of the body versus being mindful of the factors of awakening, the Four Noble Truths. So just to say that there's a progression. And my idea over these next weeks is to have to take each one of these. And as the text says, it's kind of to contemplate them. The word for contemplation that the Buddha uses is anupassati, which means to look closely or to look again. You know, so I want to talk a little bit about sati itself, mindfulness. I mentioned this book by Joseph Goldstein, which is called Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Awakening. And I think one of Joseph's intentions in, you know, I mean, it's like a 500-page book, you know, about basically the Satipatthana Sutta. And I think one of Joseph's intentions in calling it mindfulness is almost in a way to reclaim this word, you know, which is a word that has come onto the mainstream in a big way and is used in different ways. So for Dharma practice, for Buddhist practice, there's a very particular meaning of sati, of mindfulness. So, you know, so just to understand what that is may be helpful in the practice. So sati is usually translated as mindfulness. Another possible translation is attention or awareness. You know, so just to, it's closely related to the Pali word sarati, which means to remember. Analio says in this book that sati is closely related to memory in the sense that it helps us to remember something. If we're learning something, if there's a lot of mindfulness that's present, we're going to be able to recall what we've learned more easily. So it's one of its functions is to facilitate memory. But in a very simple way, sati, mindfulness, means to hold something in mind. You know, it's just this ability to hold something in mind. So it has this specific function to hold our attention in the present moment. You know, so it's what helps us to come back. If our intention is to be with the breath, the function of mindfulness helps us to stay with the breath. And in a way, it's that voice that tells us, oh, we've gone off, you know, when thinking or, you know, distraction or something, and brings us back. That's sati. So, its characteristic quality is presence. And sati is a mental factor that comes up over and over again in the Buddhist teachings. This may not, you know, depending on how familiar you are with these lists, there's a lot of lists, especially in the Theravada and in the Buddhist teaching, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven factors of awakening, the eightfold path, the Noble Eightfold Path. So sati is in each of these. So it's very, very important function. Uninvolved, detached, receptive observation. Sati is this observing power of the mind. And then in this, in what I read, if you notice where the Buddha says, sati is supported by three other things. Ardency, clear comprehension, clear knowing, and this giving up of desire and discontent for the world. And just to say something about that, it's like sati itself is very simple. You know, it can be very simple. It's just this receptive knowing. But as part of satipatthana practice, it involves a few of these other factors. So this ardency, I mean, ardency is a word that maybe we don't use so much. I don't know. It can be ardent about things. But it implies a kind of energy, a kind of diligence. Mindfulness practice, you know, if we're falling asleep every time we do mindfulness practice, it's a sign that we need to add more energy. I mean, it's also probably a sign that we're just really tired. But it's like, you know, there's an energetic continuity to the practice that needs. So it's like it's the quality that keeps us with the breath, that keeps us coming back to the breath. So the Buddha is saying, when you do these satipatthanas, you know, be ardent. Then there's this word, clearly knowing, clear comprehension. This is a translation of the word sampajana. it's another function of mindfulness practice, and it's to know what we're doing when we're doing it. Some of you may have some experience or have heard of the noting practice. Noting is a way of developing this quality of sampajana, of clear comprehension. So if we're with the rise and fall of the belly, and as it rises, we say, rising, rising. And then as it falls, we say, falling, falling. It's this kind of reinforcing the knowing, reinforcing this clear comprehension, just to know what we do when we do it. So that's sampajana. And then this third factor is giving up desire and discontent for the world. And it's interesting, at the very beginning of these instructions, the Buddha is saying there needs to be this shift that happens. You know, so often when we come to meditation practice, to mindfulness practice, we come because we're suffering some way. And we begin to practice with the hope that somehow, you know, it was very reasonable intention, a reasonable hope that this practice is going to help my life go better, is going to help me with all these, you know, all my problems, you know, so to speak. And it may very well help us with our problems, and it may very well help us in this way. But it's almost like what the instruction is here, and what the Buddha's suggesting is that in order to really do this practice and enter into the practice, we need to somehow disentangle our mind from all of our problems in the world. Somehow disentangle ourselves from all the things that we want, all the things that we don't want. I think about this as a shift from being involved in the content of our mind, the content of our life, to noticing the process. You know, so usually we're totally involved in the content, you know, in this, you know, for good reason. We have to live in that world. And then for example, if we're late, we're going somewhere, and we're on the highway, in this traffic, and you know, we're thinking, okay, well, I'll get in this lane looks like it's going faster, or maybe I'll get off and I'll use the side streets, or this kind of strategizing, or this thinking, oh, you know, crap, I'm going to be late, and blah, blah, blah. This is being involved in the content. And then this shift in the process is like, it's almost like turning the mind around and noticing how we're relating to what's happening. Is there stress? Is there suffering? Is there wanting? Is there is this unpleasant? You know, actually, it can be really unpleasant to be stuck in traffic, and to notice that unpleasantness is this shift, you know, out of this, the kind of the story and the content, to notice the body, notice how the body feels, notice the contraction, notice the breathing. So anyway, that's one example. And it's, you know, and it's a way of, you know, so each of these satipatthana, each of these foundations of mindfulness or ways of applying mindfulness are are simply ways of connecting with what's real and what's immediate in our experience. It's a beautiful practice. It's a beautiful path that can unfold. When we have this willingness, almost this willingness to learn to look at our experience in a different way, you know. So it's like another. I think maybe this is a good place to end. But this is like another translation of Satipatthana Tan Jeff, who's another monk teacher who sometimes comes here, she calls it the frames of reference. So these are four frames of reference. And so what they are is these categories, ways of categorizing our experience. And so this meditation practice, and you know, to go through and just to understand what each of these are, is very simply learning to look at our experience in a different way. And more precisely, learning to look at our experience to see in a way that brings letting go, in a way that brings understanding, wisdom, and letting go. Next week, we'll talk more about mindfulness of the body. The way that we often teach mindfulness of the body is just kind of to be with sensations of the body. But in this text, the Buddha offers a number of different ways. And it's almost like, it's like there are guided meditations on how to see the body anatomically. You know, so you notice the hair and nails and the organs and the, you know, and it's, but just to understand with some of these practices that can get pretty esoteric and granular and unusual, maybe. The point of it is this disentangling. The point of all these practices is to learn how to see the body in a way that we can let go. There's also in the mindfulness of the body section a part of it which is meditating on a corpse, basically meditating on a dead body. And this is, you know, traditionally Buddhist monks would go to charnel grounds and go to watch the process of how a dead body changes, and you know, and to sit there with it, you know. And again, the purpose is not for some kind of self-mortification, or you know, that the body itself is wrong, bad, disgusting, you know, all these things. Not at all. It's to, you know, one of the ways we get caught, one of the ways human beings get caught is through attachment to the body. You know, we lust after bodies, we are attached to the body, we identify with the body as being who we really are. And so these practices are offering ways of looking, ways of seeing the body that can help us let go. And as the Satipatthana meditation progresses, there are points in the meditation where the body itself is filled with bliss, is filled with joy, is filled with peace. So the body is not something that we need to just cut up in little pieces and get rid of. The body is our vehicle, but it all, you know, it's how we see it. It's how we relate to the body. And when we can relate to the body in ways that we can let go, that letting go is what brings the bliss, is what brings the happiness, the joy, which suffuses the body, you know. So, I apologize if this is a little, it can get dry and, you know, kind of, I don't know what the word is, it's, you know, in the weeds or something. But the gist of the practice, the gist of each of these satipatthana is what I've been saying, is that we're learning ways of looking at our experience that are onward leading, that are leading towards more happiness, more peace, more letting go, and less suffering. So, we have a few moments, if anyone has any questions about this so far. I want to leave time in the coming weeks as we go through each of these for Q&A. So, any? Okay. Well, thank you very much.